Hey everybody, welcome back to Background Noise. I'm your host, Sarah Bannon. I haven't put anything out in several weeks. Life has been absolutely insane. I had to take some self-care breaks and really do my own thing for a little bit, but it's been brought to my attention that you guys have missed hearing my voice on your devices, so here I am. This is a really exciting episode. I reached out to the author of Ghosts of Southeast Kansas, Cheryl Carvajal. She gave me permission to read you guys a few stories from her book, Ghosts of Southeast Kansas. I don't know if you've read this before. I don't know if you've even heard of it before, but many of these stories happened in or around my own small town. They're very exciting, especially if you're from the Southeast Kansas area. It's really cool to hear like the lore and spooky stories from this area. I did want to read to you on the back of this book. There's an about the author, and I'm going to go ahead and read that to you guys right now before I get started. Cheryl Carvajal has been writing since she learned how, beginning her first play at the age of 6. She lived in Kansas and Oklahoma for several years, and she recently moved from SEK to Bothell, Washington with her husband Richard, her two young children, and her black tabby. She earned her bachelor's degree in English at the East Central University in Ada, Oklahoma, her master's in literature at the Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, and her doctorate in English at the University of South Carolina in Columbia. She spent 2 years researching this book and one more writing and publishing it. Dr. Carvajal is a playwright, and several of her plays have been performed in the William Inge Center for the Arts. She also writes fiction and poetry, sings, draws, paints, juggles, teaches English and theater, and works actively to inspire others to enrich their lives through the involvement of arts. I love that. Wow, those are some incredible accomplishments, and I feel very privileged and special to be able to read to you straight from the book. What she's written for all of us. And the fun fact, or the fun part, is I haven't picked a single story out of this book. I thought I would let fate kind of take control of that and just open it up and read whatever story it lands on. A big, big thank you to Cheryl for allowing me to read this to you guys. She was very sweet, and it was very kind of her to offer me this opportunity and to offer you all the opportunity to listen to some of her stories and hopefully get really interested and go out and buy it. I believe you can find it on Amazon. I will have the links in the description of the podcast so that you can buy yourself a copy if you would like to. My copy is signed, so it's very exciting. Okay, let's get into it. I'm going to flip to a page. Let me see here. Okay. I'm on page 99, and this story is from Independence, Kansas. Let's get started. This is called The Guardian Spirit of Mr. Miller. On South Penn, a serene-looking gray and white house has sat for more than a century, and its kindly, ghostly inhabitant has haunted both levels of the house for several decades. A widow sold the house after her family had owned it for many years, and its next owners began to see and hear ghostly events almost immediately. The main apparition has been called Mr. Miller, for most have assumed he is the spirit of the widow's dead husband, although no one knows for certain. What has been discovered is that the Millers had a daughter who ran away to elope. Instead of marrying her lover, she returned to her parents' home, unmarried and in a wheelchair. Witnesses do not know if it's the green bedroom that she inhabited, but they know that the ghost, an older man who usually appears worried, has been caught gazing down the hallway towards the green bedroom on several occasions. The green bedroom lies at the end of a hall, past all the other bedrooms. Mr. Miller's presence seems the most focused on that room in particular, especially when a young woman like his daughter resides there. One family with two daughters found his presence both common and comforting. The younger daughter, whose older sister was staying in the green room during high school, frequently saw Mr. Miller's ghost glowing with a yellow light as he stood in the hallway. His face, worn with concern, peered down the hallway towards the green room several moments each time before he vanished entirely. The ghost would also make its presence known downstairs. The family placed a Navajo bell on the back door to announce anyone entering, and it would ring as the door opened and closed on its own, even when the whole living household was within sight of each other. Most often, though, Mr. Miller was seen upstairs in the green room itself. When the older sister of the family moved away, the younger sister began sleeping in the green room. She found that if the bed faced east, she could hear a man snoring in the middle of the night. One night, she woke up very late, as if sensing somebody else was in the room. She saw Mr. Miller's apparition standing at the window, one transparent leg partially lost in the bed's edge, as it had when she saw him in the hallway. Concern lined Mr. Miller's features, and he gazed out the window intently before disappearing. Perhaps he was looking for his daughter, fearing she would not return. A few times, the young woman came into even closer contact with him. On one occasion, her boyfriend was over without her parents there. The couple had only been alone for a few moments, though, and had only begun to snuggle on the sofa when the boyfriend began shouting, "Stop it!" Something unseen was poking the young man hard in the back. The annoying jabbing was enough to send him away, especially since the young man couldn't figure out who was doing it to him. The boyfriend left immediately and never returned. He'd been spooked away by the spirit of a protective father filling in for the absent one. On another night, the young woman claims that she woke shaken from a nightmare, sweating in fright. When she opened her eyes, she found Mr. Miller's comforting presence sitting at the end of the bed. He gazed on her, leaned forward, and asked, "Are you okay?" It seemed the ghostly father's concern for the sad plight of his daughter was generalized until he worries for all the young women living in the house, as if to save them from his own daughter's fate. One witness believes the ghost of his daughter remains in the house as well. The witness alone at home that day heard the most agonized sobs. She followed them through the house and out onto the front porch, where she found a ghostly figure of a young woman. Miller's daughter was not only seen by one witness either. One morning at breakfast, when the witness brought up that she had seen the ghost of Mr. Miller several times, her father replied, "That's funny. I always thought the ghost was a little girl." We might wonder whether both spirits remain in the home because they are locked in their sorrow from so many years before, long before death ended in their earthly suffering. Perhaps both are still here to help make sure the home's living inhabitants do not end up suffering as they once did. That is a very intense story. I do know where this house is located. I've been to that town several times. It's kind of interesting, don't you think? We could get into the theories about ghosts, but I might have to save that for another episode. Right now, I just want to read you guys some really nice stories from this book. Okay, I'm going to flip through again. Drum roll, please. Havana. Okay, I opened right to Havana. This is a very short story, so let's get into it. It says, Havana, the Indian burial grounds. Two areas near Havana are formal Indian burial grounds, according to Kevin Klubine, who hunts in the area. At one, near Bee Creek and the Montgomery County Chautauqua County line, he and his father were out hunting early one morning. They saw a group of Native Americans on horseback riding north. Kevin and his father watched as the procession, which was slow, as if a funeral, slowly moved up the hill. The group didn't look solid, but more misty, like a mirage, according to Kevin. The two hunters watched the procession for a couple of minutes until all the figures in it dissolved into the mist. Later the same day, a deer he'd shot stood up on its own, though its throat had already been slit. Kevin had to admit, finally, that the hill was no ordinary hunting place. His wife now refuses to go into that area. She visited the place a few times with him, but each time she felt a strong headache coming on. A friend went hunting there with him too, but he left as quickly as he came and told Kevin later he'd had a bad feeling and felt he was being watched. Many hunters refuse to hunt out there at all, but Kevin says he hasn't been too spooked by all the activity. The other burial ground is less than 2 miles east of the Havana turnoff from Highway 75. occupants of a house across the road from the burial ground have experienced several strange events. According to witnesses, strange noise emanate from the burial ground day and night, especially in the spring and summer. Cries or moans, music, drums, and other unexplainable sounds. Within the house itself, the sounds continue. When those in the house are quiet, the voices, mysterious, unintelligible murmurs, continue, so the house is rarely silent, even when someone is there alone. Sounds are not the only evidence that something supernatural remains in the area. One witness staying in the house woke in the middle of the night to find a large, misty, blue-white column floating in the middle of his bedroom. The column was high, and it seemed to run through the ceiling, as if taller than the roof. This witness watched the column for several minutes, certain the column was looking back at me, watching me. When the column dissolved into darkness, the witness thought he had dreamed the whole thing, but then he saw his wife in the doorway. She had seen it too, but for a while she wouldn't talk about it. So afraid was she that he would think she was crazy. According to legend, the second native gravesite has been looted. Looters dug up graves and stole silver off each native's body, leaving the graves open. Such disrespect was not uncommon, but it might have caused the souls of the departed Native Americans to wander more than they would have otherwise. Perhaps the unrest in both burial grounds is a result of a white settler's ill treatment of what Native Americans view to be sacred ground. So I think we can all agree, rule number one, we don't mess with any form of burial grounds, and definitely not sacred Native American burial grounds. Say it with me, don't mess with sacred Native American burial grounds. I mean, that's probably the worst idea anybody could have, but I do find it interesting that full-on apparitions appeared in that area. There is truly a lot of really spooky and cool history in the area of Southeast Kansas. You've got a lot of really bad history and really tragic history surrounding the area. And I think with that comes a lot of kind of energy that hangs around if you subscribe to that. So I'm flipping through. Can you hear the sound of the pages? It's a very nice sound. Okay. So, let's see. Okay. I flipped to page 71, and this is called, this is out of Fredonia, Kansas, and it's called The Old Haunted House of Fredonia. At 321 North 8th Street in Fredonia sits a house which is well known for both its paranormal activity and rich history. It was the first two-story house in Fredonia, and it was originally built in the 1880s when John S. Gilmore had it built for his bride-to-be. Aww. Gilmore married his love, and they honeymooned in Niagara Falls, but his wife contracted pneumonia and died before they returned home. Sad! She was buried in Ohio, and the dejected Gilmore returned home alone. He never set foot in the house. But someone, a woman, did. Previous owner, Janet Johnson, recalls knowing someone that was there very soon after she moved in. Temperatures dropped in an odd places, and Janet and her husband Richard walked through the hallways or into various rooms. Several guests also noticed the moving cold spots. The most common manifestation of the ghost, thought to be a woman by most who have experienced something, is the smell of a perfume. Janet and her family smelled the woman's perfume throughout the house. Janet is certain the perfume is not earthly, since no one in her family wears perfume, and the scent dissipates as quickly as it materializes. A woman's form has not been seen by any witnesses I interviewed, but the lady has been heard and felt. Janet's daughter felt an invisible form sitting next to her on the bed one night, and then felt the form rise off the bed again. Once, when Richard was getting out of the shower, the bathroom floor jarred as if a bowling ball had been dropped in its center. Although the floor was clear, the incident rattled both Richard and Janet, who thought perhaps something was structurally wrong with the house, but the house was fine. The lady seemed to like bothering Richard most of all. She'd often knock on the bathroom door when he was inside, always three sharp knocks, but when he opened the door, no one was ever there. The lady had also grabbed Richard's arm a few times, and he's even had the sensation of a cat jumping on his shoulder while eating, but nothing is ever near him when this happened. Janet found a mystery earring once, an old-fashioned one with a screw end to it. She placed it in a box upstairs for safekeeping. About 3.5 years later, she found the earring again and assumed it had fallen out of the box somehow somehow been knocked around the house. When she returned it to the box, however, the other earring was still there. The ghost had found the match for me, she decided. Janet's sister has heard doors open and close along with accompanying footsteps, though no one is around to make these sounds when they occur. The unexplainable events occurred pretty consistently until Janet and her family moved out after 4 years. They continued when Joanne and Harlan Clifton moved in, especially when the couple began remodeling the entire house. Paranormal activity often escalates when a house is being changed or renovated, and the Cliftons have worked extensively to bring the house back to its original glory. Perhaps their activities have stirred up this lady ghost. Joanne's daughter helped with some of the renovation by making historically accurate curtains for most of the windows in the house. Once, while Joanne's daughter was hard at work sewing in the parlor, the electricity went out in the rest of the house. And later, Joanne discovered it had gone out in the entire town for more than an hour. Although the electricity was out everywhere, the sewing machine continued to sew, and sew, and sew, and sew, the entire time the power was out, without fail. No one in the family could explain how it was even possible, but everyone witnessed it. The electricity often works in reverse as well. Once the power went out at 10:09 p.m. on Christmas Eve, Joanne thought little of it until the next morning when she found her 5 wind-up clocks, which do not run on electricity, had been stopped at the exact same time the evening before, 10:09 p.m. 2 of the clocks had their doors open, as if someone had stopped them manually. The house is next door to a bank, and often employees at the bank call Joanne to let her know the lights are turning off and on in her house, even in the attic, though no one is in the rooms where this is occurring, and Joanne is entirely unaware of anything going on. Joanne hasn't been frightened by the activity. She calls herself surprised by each event. She claims that she has never really believed in ghosts until now. However, like Janet, she has smelled the perfume drifting around the house, often in the middle of the night. Once she and her husband smelled the perfume in the middle of the night, every night for a month, the entire month before Christmas. She has heard glass bowls clinking together on more than one occasion, and other events have made it hard for her to deny that something is happening. Once she saw her birdcage upstairs swinging wildly as if it had been struck hard. Another time, when she dusted a table upstairs, she found 13 pennies under the tablecloth. Her daughter once woke up wet, also without explanation. Enough events occurred that Joanne brought in a medium, a woman from California, to see what was going on. The woman had no knowledge of the house or history. She claimed to feel nothing until she reached the stairwell. Then, and in all of the rooms past the stairwell, she felt a strong presence of a woman from before 1900. She told Joanne the ghost was a small blonde woman, and the woman was very closely tied to the house. Joanne was told that the ghost liked her and really liked the modifications Joanne was making to the home, since Joanne had decorated in the style of the 1880s and added her feminine touch to all of the decor. Perhaps the ghost of Gilmore's fiancée is the fine lady who had returned to the house, and perhaps it is her perfume and her antics that add to the house's charm for Joanne and her husband. Joanne loves the house, claiming, "It's a different house, but a fun house." She's proud of the changes she has made, and the ghost's approval pleases her more than one might think. Perhaps the ghost is waiting for the day when the home is a complete and beautiful is as complete and as beautiful as it was when she was about to be married before she died so suddenly and tragically more than a century ago. That one was intense and a little sad. Absolutely heartbreaking. Pull on my heartstrings. I almost said pull on my toe strings. Girl, what does that even mean? Okay. So I think we have time for one more story, and instead of choosing a random one, I have one in mind that I really like. It's actually my favorite. So, we're going to read about Kaney. This story is called Sandy the Ghost Dog. Donna Knotts had always loved dogs, and Sandy was one of her favorites. He was a huge St. Bernard, a dog who had mange when Donna adopted it, but but managed to pull through and live a long, healthy life with Donna's help. He was a strange dog, one who seemed much more comfortable alone with his owner than in a room with many people. In fact, he detested women, except for Donna, of course. He was a calm dog in general, but if a woman entered the house or spent too much time in the house with Donna, Sandy became tense and growled. Men were allowed to pet him, though. Sandy and Donna spent many happy years together, but then Sandy died of old age. Donna was saddened when he died, but she had many other pets, so she continued her life as usual. Her other dogs stayed in the bedroom with her, lying on the cushions, the bed, chairs, anything they could find that was comfortable and close to their owner. But then Sandy showed up again, ready to sleep in his owner's room like usual. The other dogs sensed him at first, and most of them barked and ran out of the room in fear. Donna's dog, Kate, was the most traumatized by the event, for when Sandy appeared in his ghostly form, Kate stayed in the room, growling and barking at him for several minutes. Sandy refused to budge, though, and Kate cowered in her chair, finally running out of the room in defeat. And now, to this day, whether Sandy appears at night or not, Donna's other little dogs avoid the bedroom. They refuse to go in or climb up the bed, preferring to sleep in the hallway right outside Donna's bedroom door. Even in death, Sandy has outmatched her fellow dogs, and she remains a permanent haunting fixture in the house. Are you kidding me? Ghost dogs? I think that one's really fun. I think it would be pretty sweet if all of our pets came back as ghosts. What do you guys think? I do want to read one more. I'm going to pick somewhat of a short one because this is already running a little long. But with such an amazing opportunity from Cheryl, I really want to take advantage and read you guys as many as I can. So, with absolutely no planning, we're going to read... Let's read another pet one. This one's out of Chanute, Kansas, and it's called The Ghost Who Had Cats. In a historic area of Chanute stands a 100-year-old house with many strange secrets inside. Its current owner began discovering these secrets only a few years ago when she first bought the house, moved in, and began renovating it. What she saw and other witnesses have encountered is most undeniable evidence of paranormal activity in the house. And that activity, for some reason, involves cats. The owner, whom I'll call Helen, noticed strange events from the moment she moved in. She and her husband were in the hallway on the house's second story, walking along with Helen's daughter and infant grandchild. Helen's daughter was singing a silly song to her child, the Meow Mix song. Meow, 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 etc. When the pencil flew out from nowhere, hitting Helen's daughter in the shoulder hard. Whoever had thrown it must not have liked the singing, Helen thought. But that encounter was only the first of many, and most of the signs of this ghost's presence occur even today. One reoccurring event is a loud pounding from outside, which family members hear when they are on the first floor of the house. The pounding sounds less distinct than hammering, but it is both loud and persistent. The first few times it occurred, Helen looked out the window near the pounding and stared at the side of the house. Although the pounding continued, she could plainly see that no one stood outside. She could find no explanation for the thundering sound. For a while, the pounding frightened Helen, but after she realized nothing bad would happen, she relaxed, even treating it as if some specter was doing work at the house. Another common practice of the ghost who haunts Helen's house is that he makes noises around the house to let everyone know he's there. Helen has frequently heard the ghost open sliding glass door at the back of the house. Believing it's her husband returning from work, Helen walks to the door each time, only to find the door closed and no sign that anyone has entered the house. She has never found the sliding glass door open, so she assumes the sound deceives her. No one really opens the door at all. Or the ghost must have been polite enough to close the door behind him before disappearing. Helen's relatives, even her grandchildren, have also seen and heard a great deal. Once, her 2- and 4-year-old grandchildren were playing up in the attic. When their mother fetched them, they turned and waved goodbye to someone in the attic. They saw someone their mother didn't see. Other relatives have seen misty shadows floating across the dining room, sort of in human form, and Helen and others have seen dark apparitions closer to the floor, shaped like cats. Some of her children's laughter, and Helen's daughter has even seen a dark form with a distinct skirt, which flowed to the floor. Helen's in-laws refused to stay the night at the house after one evening. They were both asleep, but they claim loud voices woke them in the middle of the night. They grabbed a flashlight and followed the voices into the attic. Though they found nothing in the attic, both were frightened enough to avoid the house for a while, though they have since started staying there overnight again. Helen hasn't seen or heard anything in a while, but some noises, doors shutting or opening, children's voices, occur at random. Helen thinks it's possible that the ghost cats might be hers, since several of their cats have died since they moved in. She is certain that the nocturnal noises and activity are not a result of her living cats, however, since she puts them all out for the night. Despite all the years of strange activity, Helen believes that the ghosts are friendly. She admits that the pounding on the walls could get rather scary, but otherwise, she finds the dark shapes, flying pencils, missing objects, and nocturnal noises more fascinating than frightening. I can't blame Helen. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed. Once again, this book is titled Ghosts of Southeast Kansas by Shara Carvajal. And if everybody could just give her a big thank you for giving me permission to read a couple of her stories on my podcast. I thought it was super cool. I was absolutely shocked when she reached back out to me. I thought maybe I would send her a message and then, wouldn't hear back. But no, she was more than happy to let me do this. And Cheryl, I just wanted to say thank you so much. And I look forward to reading more work from you. I'm really excited. So I hope you guys have a great day, a great weekend, a great afternoon, whatever time you are listening to this. Definitely the longest podcast to date. So if you guys kind of like that, be sure to let me know. You can follow me at Twitter at The Noise Pod, and you can also contact me via email at sarah.bannon97@gmail.com, or most of you have me on Facebook at this point. Anyway, thanks guys for listening, and I'll catch you later. Stay in school, brush your teeth, eat your broccoli.